Good morning. I hope you're having a fine Sunday morning. Welcome back to another edition of Miami Valley Voices on this Cox radio station. I'm your host from the Dayton Daily News, Ron Rollins, and we're here with a couple of returning guests because we have them back every time there's a cool new exhibition at the Dayton Art Institute. We've got Amy Marceretta-Gallen, the curator at the museum. We've got Eric Brockman, the director of marketing, and we have also Daniel Rosen, who is one of the artists in the exhibition that we're here to talk about. How's everybody doing?
Doing good. Great. Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Thanks to be
for,
here.
Well, thank you for being here. I love it when you guys come in because we get to talk about art, and I love to talk about art.
Yeah.
So, Amy, to kick us off, this is the second in the series of curated exhibitions the Art Institute is doing that has to do with elements, the traditional earth elements, right?
Exactly.
And we're on water this time.
We're on water. So. And it's a fitting element for the summertime. Come in and cool off. We've got 450 penguins.
We do.
We
have two in the studio. People can't see them, but I can look at them. They're cute.
Standing sentinel facing you.
That's right. Making sure I don't screw anything up. Yeah. And what's the name of the show?
There are two installations, okay. Two exhibitions rather, but right. Three individual works.
Okay.
So one of the installations is called The Antarctic Sublime, and that's the one that features 450 mechanized penguins.
Which is really cool.
It's the most amazing thing. And then the other installation has two pieces, and that is called The Elements of Nature Water, which features a monumental photograph by a Berlin-based artist, Frank Thiel, of an iceberg, and then a over 10-foot-tall digital waterfall by a Japanese collective group called Team Lab.
Which is cool, and we want to talk about all the pieces separately. And tell us, introduce Daniel, and tell us how about the penguins.
Danny, by this point, is an old friend of ours because he had two of the most popular pieces in the Ether exhibition,
which was the last
installation that we had this spring.
Right.
And I'll just never forget when I was out in New York visiting him and looking at the work for Ether, I saw the penguins, and I just thought there's got to be a way that we need to get these to Dayton.
That's cool.
And he obliged us. He's a very busy man. In demand. He's getting commissions from all over the world, so we're really fortunate to have him here.
That's cool. Dan, tell us a little bit about your background. I mean, is this the first time in Dayton? Or?
Well, the second time. Well, actually, I used to work here with the company in my previous life as an industrial designer. I used to lead a team of designers that designed big machinery here in Dayton in the early 90s, but since I've become an artist.
Excellent. And based in New York?
I'm based in New York City, and maybe my main job is educator. I'm a associate arts professor at NYU at the School of the Arts at a program called the Interactive Telecommunications Program, where graduate students learn how to do the kind of technology-based art like the piece that I'm showing here.
So talk about the penguins. What was the inspiration? What do you want people to take away from it? I mean, there's a definite awe factor when they walk in and see all these stuffed penguins. But you want more than that from it, I believe.
You know, the piece is called Penguin's Mirror. So the penguins part is pretty obvious. I don't need to explain. Yeah. The mirror part is maybe. Is a thread that goes through all of my work. I've been doing these kind of pieces for the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. I use different mediums. A lot of them are kinetic installation like the one we have here, but I also use software and also static sculpture. But they all share the same behavior of creating an image and the image being of the viewer. Mm-hmm. And I coined that as a mirror. So when you stand in front of the penguin installation, the penguins turn towards you or away from you, and you can see your silhouette actually in black and white from penguins' tummies or backs.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so the penguins really are maybe the 20th or 30th iteration in this obsession of creating images by different mechanical means. I've used various materials of nature, wood and fur and metal, and the penguins are the last one to date, but I'm sure there'll be more.
That's cool. Well, and following that theme, that was true of the piece you had in the Ether show as well. Remind people of that piece.
That's true. In that show, Amy chose to show two of my pieces. One of them is called Brushed Metal, a Mirror, and that had over 900 steel discs that were sanded and reflected light in a very particular way to reflect the viewer standing in front of the piece. Mm-hmm. And the second piece was called Snow Mirror, which was a dark large projected installation in the middle of space, and a large group of people could stand in front of that installation and again see their likeness being created on the screen with these little flaky
like snowflakes,
like snowflakes.
Digital snowflakes.
Exactly.
It was like you were coming together with pixels, and it was people loved that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would stand in front. Well, you probably saw it, and they would stand in front of it and move around.
Right.
And that was very cool. And with the inspiration with the penguins. I mean, why them? I mean.
Maybe why not?
And also, I deserved that. Okay.
And also, you know, when you look at. So like I said, this is an obsession of mine, and you know, I walk around and I see pixels. I see elements of pictures that I could create a picture out of everywhere, and I gather those. And penguins seem to be a prime suspect with their high contrast white and black, and being so cuddly, and the way they huddle together in groups really kind of evoke this thing that even though they have this meta behavior that they're all huddling probably to conserve heat or for some other reason, they also have their individuality. And when you stand in front of this installation, they definitely all adhere to the commands coming from the computer to create an image or to create this choreographed dance that they do. Mm-hmm. But also, from time to time, you'll see two of them that are rubbing their beaks against each other or high-fiving their wings together. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you see them as individuals. Mm-hmm. And this duality of seeing them as individuals or as a group is something that I think, you know, it's true for penguins. It's true for many other communities.
Yeah, it's true for people. Yeah, absolutely. And the technical logistics of the infrastructure underneath it, they're all on individual little pivoting stands that are all hooked into the computer. I mean, it was
a complicated
infrastructure underneath the, underneath the cuteness. Yeah.
It does take complicated means to do simple things. So their behavior seems kind of obvious and simple. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure, the machinery behind it is a computer, and each one of the penguins is connected to the shaft of a motor, and 450 of them are controlled by the computer. There's also a sensor in the center of the piece that sees the people interacting with the piece and commands every individual penguin to become a pixel and turn black or white.
That's really neat. Was any magic to the number 450, or was that just, was it scaled to the room, or?
Not to this room, actually. When I first show the piece at a gallery in New York, it was part of a solo exhibition, and I had to cram more than one piece into that space. 450 seems to occupy the right amount of footage on the floor.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of my work, especially the mechanical pieces, sometimes deal with a poverty of information. It's a line that I walk and try to think about, what's the least amount of information, of visual information, that you need to supply in order to create an image?
Oh,
and I'm always very surprised by how our mind and our eyes really want to make images, and you know, I keep reducing the number, and we see images all the time.
Yeah.
Which actually kind of rolls in a little bit into the other two pieces, because there's no shortage of visual information. And I'm thinking of the photograph of the iceberg of the glacier. Talk about that.
That piece is. It's a large format photograph.
It's large.
It's
large,
massive.
Large,
it's
large format. Yeah.
It's about 13.5 feet wide.
Yeah.
The glacier itself is 18 miles long by 3 miles wide.
Where is that glacier?
It's in Argentina.
Okay.
It's the Perito Moreno Glacier in Argentina.
Right.
And so Southern Hemisphere, and I think a lot of people don't associate Argentina with glaciers.
No, probably.
But it's pretty far down there, and it's one of the few glaciers, one of three, I believe, that's actually growing. So scale is really important to this piece, and the artist chose to extend the glacier to the boundaries of the picture, so it's limitless.
Right.
It's also a very low vantage point at which we see it, and the glacier itself towers 240 feet above sea level.
Wow.
So to think about the scale of humans in relationship to that glacier, similarly with the other two pieces, we were really thinking about, again, this concept of the sublime and being in awe of nature. I think it's a relationship that's constantly shifting and evolving as our relationship shifts to nature. So that was definitely something that we wanted to put people in front of, and to have a contemplative moment with that and think about these larger questions.
Right.
So really all three exhibitions will allow viewers an opportunity to do that. So that's kind of a common thread that pulls you through.
Sure, and there's a lot to see in that picture. I mean, it's
there's a lot to see.
On the one hand, it's a picture of a big chunk of ice, and on the other hand, there's like veins and different colors and crags and crevices and shadows.
In a way, and we have two comparative examples to so people can kind of compare and contrast. We have Frederick Edwin Church's monumental icebergs painting of an iceberg off the coast of Newfoundland, 1861. Right. That was where we took the cue to stage the teal photograph.
Right.
Very
You have a reproduction of the church.
We do. We have a large reproduction. And we also have a reproduction of my sister's photograph of the Parita Moreno Glacier.
Oh.
She's a landscape photographer. She's an ER physician, but also a photographer. But it's she's a landscape photographer as opposed to a fine artist photographer. And they're very different approaches to that same chunk of ice. So it's allowing viewers to see a different approach. Teal really approaches it as a sculpture, as a monumental kind of, it could be a block of marble that you're seeing in detailed image of, because you notice the veining, you notice the structure of it.
I saw a lot of just different, like, it looked like you could sort of see how the sculpture, or not how the glacier, how it was formed over time. I mean, there's layers to it that you can, in the ice, different bands of color.
There are layers, and with that
striations
comes history.
It's beautiful, yeah.
I watched a documentary called Chasing Ice, and they're actually able to core an iceberg much the same way as you would core a tree, and you can see the different layers, and through that, learn so much about the landscape and changing climates, and
that's really cool.
It is interesting.
So then, talk about the waterfall. The
waterfall
the third piece,
is it's this installation is a little over 10 feet tall. It's a 5-channel video from this Japanese artist collective called Team Lab. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a think tank of artists, designers, and architects. They are really influenced by the sense of space and perception, and in particular, connecting to their Japanese roots. And so with this instance, they were looking at Japanese woodblock prints and noticing the flatness of the color. But in more instances than not, water in Japanese woodblock prints is animated in some way through a variated line. It's, and so they took that as a starting point, and we're looking at this sort of time-space continuum and how and why water is represented in this active way. So they rendered this digital waterfall 5 times higher than HD. So it really, when you look at it, it does feel very three-dimensional.
Oh, it does, yeah. And actually, it sort of reminds me a little bit of the snowflake pixels from Daniel's piece last time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very dissimilar works, but if you stood too close to either one, you know what I'm saying? The waterfall is formed with tiny little itty-bitty white pixels that float in a stream or flow, when we had the preview the other night, people were just sort of standing there watching it.
It's mesmerizing.
It is absolutely transfixing. It's like watching water. I mean, that's water and fire. You know, I mean, why do we sit around campfires? Why do we go to the beach and watch the waves? You know, I mean, there's something elemental about it, which is kind of what you're drawing on, really.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So, what else does Team Lab do? I mean, they're an interesting. How did you connect with that group for that piece?
You know, we. When we knew the theme of the year and we knew we were starting to look for different artists who work and touch on those elements, my colleague Catherine Sigworth and I kind of came to them almost at the same moment. She'd seen a show that they'd done at Asia Society in New York. Mm-hmm. I had seen their work at Pace Gallery in New York. And so virtually at the same moment, we came to each other's offices, Team Lab.
So
we just started exploring all of what they do. And they're really an amazing group of artists.
That's cool. They don't just do artwork, though, right?
They do artwork. They do a lot of other technological sort of applications, websites, apps.
Yeah.
If anybody goes on YouTube,
you're going to drive me to their website now.
I am. Well, also to Danny's website.
Of course.
Trolls are another. He just got a big commission
you mentioned,
from Target Corporation.
You mentioned the Trolls last night.
Yeah.
I should say the audience knows this is, we're taping this on Thursday, and the Jefferson Patterson Society preview of the exhibition was Wednesday night. So when I say last night, I mean Wednesday. Talk about you mentioned the Trolls. Talk about that. That sounds really cool.
My latest piece, actually, after the Penguins piece was completed, Target approached me, and they saw the Penguins piece and also a piece I made in the same year called Pom Pom's Mirror, which is made out of these fur puffs.
Oh.
And they asked me if I could create a piece made out of these colorful, lucky, Lucky Trolls.
Oh, the little plastic
crazy,
ones with the hair?
With the crazy hair.
Oh, my gosh. And my sisters played with those as little kids, yeah.
I usually shy away from commercial commissions like this, but the Trolls would be something that I would use for a piece anyway,
right,
probably
exactly.
Eventually. So I jumped on that opportunity, and I created a piece for them that has 900 of these pink and green Trolls.
Oh my gosh.
And they debuted the piece at the Miami Basel Art Fair in the winter. And since it's permanently installed in their headquarters in Minneapolis,
oh,
I'm
really?
Afraid only they can see it. Or maybe if you visit Target headquarters,
yeah, well,
you can see it.
Or on their
why
website.
Not?
But I love that you had to gel the hair on the...
Oh, right. The hair was too crazy. I had to gel 900 of them.
900.
I got to see that. If you're just joining us, this is Miami Valley Voices on this Cox station. I'm Ron Rollins, your host. We are here with an artist and two friends from the Dayton Art Institute, Amy DeGallen, the curator, Eric Brockman, the marketing director, and Daniel Rosen, the artist, one of the three artists who is in the current... The current special exhibition at the museum, which has to do with water, so when you're putting a show like this together, how did you marry these three pieces in your head? I mean, what I assume there was other stuff that was considered that didn't make it. Mm-hmm. These kind of gelled. Mm-hmm. How did talk about that process a little bit?
Well, as I said, when I saw the penguins, I had to find a way to get them here.
Must have the penguins.
I must have the penguins and. You know, I was thinking about just people's relationship with nature and how that's mediated and how that's shifting. And, you know, I don't want to get too far down a path of global warming or climate shift and one of these reasons, you know, abound.
There is an iceberg.
There's a glacier. And also the Antarctic terrain in general. I mean, there's been so many stories recently about the climate shifts there and as it threatens the penguin population, penguins have to adapt.
Right.
I think similarly, the piece itself is adaptive and generative in the way it thinks and responds. And it's a fun way to approach, for some people, a tough issue. And I think, again, part of what I always try to do with anything really at the institution is that I want to slow people down. I want them to think.
Oh, that's interesting.
I want them to...
Okay.
Contemplate bigger issues, and you know, people just sort of sometimes walk through life like a Pokemon. You know, this is the thing right now, and I feel it's part of our jobs to slow people down and make them think about different things, and if it takes a penguin or a digital waterfall, to bring up some conversation, then I say let's do it.
That's really interesting. Are the woodblock prints? They're from the Dayton Art Institute collection,
right?
Yeah.
So I mentioned the woodblock prints.
There's a lot of those.
Japanese woodblock
prints
as an inspiration for the Team Lab artists.
Right.
Dayton's got an amazing collection of Japanese woodblock prints.
Right.
And so we brought out three that are physically in the installation, but we have so many that it was fun for us to develop a little companion installation that will be opening, that's actually opening. And it's in Gallery 105.
Okay, cool. And we'll come back to that in just one second. So that's cool about the prints. Folks who are used to coming to the special exhibitions at the museum will notice that this show is not all in the big giant space that is usually was where the Ether show was.
Right, right.
So it's in three different rooms. What led to that? It's a different presentation.
It's a different presentation, and our thought behind it was to activate different parts of the museum and to get people to go around. The waterfall, for example, is in a gallery that hasn't been used as a gallery for many years, and we're hoping to re-engage that space for part of our permanent collection.
Mm-hmm.
That is a surprise to come. It's one in process.
Go.
So for the fall exhibition suite, we are featuring Earth as the element, and it is two contemporary photographers, Richard Moss and Edward Bratinsky, in an exhibition called Ravaged Sublime, Contemporary Photographers.
Cool.
It's really exciting because we've tied into Cincinnati's Photo Focus, and there are a lot of events and lectures. We're bringing Richard Moss out to speak.
Is Photo Focus based at the Art Museum in Cincinnati? Or
it's
is that
in a collective of museums.
Community-wide,
a lot of events. primarily during the month of October.
Okay.
So there'll be an overlap with Ravaged Sublime and the last weekend of all of the exhibitions, the water exhibitions at the museum.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And so have you started planning next year yet or no? Maybe you have.
We have. We are actually very close to having 2 years out planned.
Really?
We are.
Is that typical?
It's been a goal since I arrived to get at least 2 years out.
Right.
You know, at larger museums, when I worked in Detroit and Cleveland, we were 5 years out.
Right,
so getting 2 years out is a
really
good feeling.
Right. Can you give us any hints or is it?
Well, I can tell you 2018 is the year of paper.
Ah.
And in many forms, from contemporary large room installation based paper pieces.
Oh, that sounds neat.
To another really exciting photography show that will tie into 2018's Photo
mm-hmm.
Focus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the whole year is paper. 2017, I think, we don't yet have a thumb on the theme,
mm-hmm.
but it is ranging from Viennese artists in the fall, mm-hmm. big Viennese exhibition, to artists from this country experience in the Orient, possibly,
mm-hmm.
and possibly another contemporary exhibition.
That's cool. That sounds like it's stuff that is also taking advantage of the DAI's.
It is.
The
Again,
strengths
we,
of the collection
we really try
you
to think
have,
about
right.
the strengths, and we're thinking about reinterpreting the whole museum. And so some of these are tied into opportunities to then re-engage those parts of the collection.
And that's part of the big master plan.
It's part of, exactly.
Which we haven't really talked about on this show, but and we've written about it. And
right.
That's
mm-hmm.
underway, yeah.
It is.
That's cool. Eric, talk about any upcoming side programs, anything else coming up at the museum?
Oh, we always have
always
a lot
have
of other
going, right.
events and programs going on in August. We've got our jazz series continues. We've got a new yoga at the museum series we started in the spring that just took off like wildfire, and a new one of those in August.
Is that in the galleries or where's that?
It's primarily in the Gothic cloister.
Oh, that's
in,
cool.
in the Gothic cloister. We did one in June that was outside in the Hale cloister. We'll have another one coming up in August. We'll be announcing pretty shortly, so they can watch the website and our Facebook page for information on that. And of course, September. We all know what comes in September.
It's tell us.
It's Oktoberfest time, so yeah,
that's
that'll,
right.
you know, it's the middle of summer now.
What
but
is
it'll
the date for Oktoberfest this year?
It is September 23rd through the 25th.
Right.
The preview party on the 23rd.
Is the year going so fast that we're already looking forward to Oktoberfest? That's crazy.
Yeah, it seems like July just started and we're already at the middle of July, and it's flying by.
That's
and
really
of course
cool.
Oktoberfest will occur right about the same time as the just before the presidential debates
mm-hmm.
at
mm-hmm.
Wright State. So that's
right.
going to be an interesting weekend in Dayton.
It's going to be a very interesting weekend in Dayton. That's true. Amy, talk a little bit about back to the current show a little bit. Where would you advise people start, since it is in the three different rooms and locations? It's not like a linear. I go in the door and I follow the exhibition to the end. You know, I mean, it is, if you were just suggesting some place for somebody to begin to hook the pieces together, what would you recommend?
You know, I think that. I guess that's one of the nice things about it. There is no starting, middle, or end point, so mm-hmm. you could really start wherever you'd like. From a pure sort of economy of pathway, you could start upstairs, go through the Great Hall
mm-hmm.
and see the waterfall first,
mm-hmm.
go downstairs and see the teal iceberg, see the penguins, and then you'll be downstairs already to go over to the Japanese prints.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, as I said, we really have activated the space in a new way, and so you will be really seeing parts of the museum that maybe you haven't seen in a while.
Right, absolutely. And the waterfall just it was fun actually at the preview the other night to watch people relating to each of the pieces with the penguins, with Daniel's penguins. There was like I said earlier, there's a big oh shucks, they're so cute factor, but there I think there kind of was I think people figured out gradually that they were following the viewer. I think that was kind of a gradual understanding that the viewer had, and then with the waterfall, people just were trying to figure out if it was generated digitally or if it was a loop. And actually, what is the answer to that? Do we know? Is it a digital or is it a loop or?
We think it's generative. You know, it's that's one of the things that's sort of beyond me technically.
Sure. It doesn't really matter.
But I mean, the penguins are generative. And I think one of the things that is important with the penguins is to stand back and watch them. People sometimes come right into the space and don't realize that they have their own whole sequence of things and activities that they do. So to stand back. The other thing I want to mention, you talked about pathways, is that our education team, Susan Martis, has produced a really smart gallery guide that connects the pieces in the exhibition to pieces in the permanent collection.
Yeah.
So it does provide kind of a roadmap to really connect some dots.
How do you end up working with the education staff on that stuff? Are they part of the curatorial process?
From day one, they are, really. Yeah. I think it's an important relationship that we start from the beginning, from conception through realization.
Right.
Because they develop programming and they think about these gallery guides and we change and exchange our labels back and forth so that we're really all on the same page.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And
then,
and let's remind people, too, you're on the show fairly often. I mean, we get you in here a couple times a year. Remind us how long you've been with the Art Institute and your background.
Well, I've been there almost 4 years. Mm-hmm. I judge it because I have a daughter who's about to turn 4, and when I arrived, she was 6 weeks old. So there we go. But prior to here, I was at a university museum up in Vermont, and then I came from large museums. I worked in Cleveland at the Cleveland Museum of Art. And
love
then,
it. Yep.
Detroit, which is my hometown. I was at the Detroit Institute of Arts.
And do you get back to those museums very often? Or?
I do. Yeah. I actually do.
Yeah. Cleveland's the one that I grew up in, near. Yeah, but it's a fabulous museum. And actually, I'm hoping that some of the Republicans will go to the museum while they're taking a break from the convention next
they
week.
They should. It would be a loss if they didn't.
It's an excellent place. Any parting thoughts? We got just a moment or two left. What do you hope people get out of the exhibition?
I think I mentioned earlier just to slow down and contemplate your relationship with nature, really.
Right.
But to have fun. I mean, I think again, we just, you know, are trying to get people to think about things on a broader, you know, playing field.
Very much.
Through art.
Yeah. Daniel, any parting thoughts on Dayton? You're leaving soon?
Well, maybe not leaving just for a while, and we've been collaborating twice already, so perhaps in the future
that'd be great.
There'll be more.
We'd love to have you come back. And Oktoberfest, Eric, is September 23rd.
Yep, 23rd through the 25th, DaytonArtInstitute.org. You can find out all about everything going on, and hope everybody comes out and sees the penguins, the other pieces.
Right. And all the lectures and then gallery talks. Yeah.
Great exhibition for families. Kids are going to love the penguins.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, and our museum store has purchased the actual penguin that's in the installation so that you can buy one of your very own.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yes, our friends here
adorable
at the
stuff
studio
penguins,
are available in the museum store.
That's cool. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having
Thanks
us.
For having
and
us.
Amy and Eric, we'll get you guys back in time for to talk about the next show when it comes up in a couple months, and we'll see you then. In the meantime, we've had Amy Marceau de Gallen and Eric Brogman from the Dayton Art Institute, their friend Daniel Rosen, who is one of the artists in the current show that is all about making you stop and slow down and think about water and everything it means. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Absolutely. This has been Miami Valley Voices. I'm your host, Ron Rollins. We'll see you next week. If you would like to listen again or hear previous episodes, the show is available on a podcast on WHIO.com. Meanwhile, have a great day. We'll see you next week.